is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Predators make a small move for a defenseman from Anaheim. They trade Matt Irwin. I'm guessing it's a bottom pair kind of guy or a third pair kind of guy, but that's okay. They make that small move. No other big moves made at the trade deadline. And David Poile referenced when talking with reporters today, Floyd, about how in the last 12 games this has been a good team, and that was reason that he wanted to continue in that direction. This is what David Poile said 30 minutes ago.
There's things that are better, but I'm clearly not going to sit up here and say everything is perfect. Our record is 8-4-1, I think, in the last 12 games, which is right at the top of the league, like in top six in the league. So, I mean, that's how we always measure stuff. We look at the scoreboard and you win or lose. But would I like things to be better? Absolutely. But I think under John Hines, and we have to appreciate making a coaching change, there's going to be a learning curve for everybody, and there has been certainly some adjustments, and there's some players that cheese has got moved a little bit. Some got a bigger slice of cheese, and some have got a smaller slice of cheese. But overall, I think we're going in the right direction. And again, it all comes back to the same thing in terms of making, you know, big moves or making no moves, and you see what I did today. So this team is, you know, for the most part, we've only had a couple of changes in the last couple of years, so everybody knows everybody. The systems are changing a little bit, but my hopes and thoughts are today that the way we're playing, that we should be a playoff team.
Floyd, do you think the Predators have turned a corner of late and are playing better and thus gives you the hope that this is a playoff team and maybe even a playoff team that can do well?
Well, I mean, let's start with the playoffs first. That's the key issue here. I think everybody recognizes that.
Out of a playoff spot by two points. But they have four games in hand on Arizona and three games in hand on Winnipeg, who's 1 point ahead of the Predators.
So you have to feel good about all of that. You know, optimistic, let me put it that way. And I think once you make the playoffs, then they're going to see what they can do. It's the same old story. And you hear everybody in the league say, yeah, you know, once you make the playoffs, you never know. And the Titans are probably a great example of that, just like the Preds were a couple years ago. So, the couple of things there that to me that I think stood out was I think he recognizes the fact that there are some players that are playing a different role now than they were before. And that, I don't know if you've ever read it, but there's a book about don't move my cheese.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's referencing there. You know, some guys are having a bigger slice, some guys are having a smaller slice, and they have to adjust to it. But the other thing I think was he said, all in all, he thinks they're headed in the right direction. So that kind of sums it up for me.
But do you agree with that?
I don't know. I mean, the 8-4-1 part.
I've noticed a lot of your takes today have been with the well, they said this or well, yeah, this, that, but it wasn't the I think.
Well, I think that when I, like in the trade deadline, I mean, you're asking him what he thinks because you're wondering, well, why didn't you trade or why did you trade or you know, what were you thinking? And so it helps me when I hear them talk about, you know, well, this is what I think. I think we're headed in the right direction. So, I mean, I think he's saying that, you know, we're headed in the right direction. He likes what the coach is doing. He understands some of the players are not going to be happy because their cheese has been moved. And he didn't think that a big trade, buying aspect part of his program was in, and that's what I thought. I didn't think that he would feel like he would have the resources to do a bunch of things, and so that limits what he's doing. So, I mean, again, I think I probably understand all of it. Do I agree with all of it? I'm not sure I do, but you know, he knows a heck of a lot more than I do.
Oh, that would cross into farming somebody else's land, and
you
don't like doing that.
Somebody else's land. Exactly.
I guess I've got two questions that we won't get the answer to that do, I think, play a role in this. One, How much longer is David Poyle willing to do this job for? Because if David Poyle's willing to, if David Poyle thinks he's going to be the general manager for the Predators in 5 years when he's 75 years old, does he approach it differently than if David thinks, you know what, this year and next year is all I got, and then I'm retiring and I'm moving to such and such, and you'll never hear from me again, kind of thing?
Although I don't sense David would be the kind of guy that would do something to try to hit a high note on his way out.
Right, that is rather selfish, but yeah, it also is kind of natural too at the same time.
Yeah, but I don't see David doing that. I mean, David is, you know, trying to do his job rather than protect it.
The second is, and again, these are questions that you won't get the answer to. Even if you ask David directly, how much longer do you plan on being GM for? He won't tell you.
Nah.
What would you have got? What were you getting offered for Smith and Granlund? You know, I mean, if David made it clear that I'm sure he had discussions on Smith and Granlund, at least that was the interpretation I got from what he said. But what were those discussions? And it does lead me to believe that if David got his socks knocked off, those guys would have been gone. And you wonder, again, you wonder if something was in the works on Granlund today because he didn't practice for a maintenance day.
I don't, you know, listening to this conversation, I don't sense that. But I
you,
mean,
didn't,
you, could
you
be
didn't
right.
think that from what he said when he was asked about Smith and Granlund? You didn't think that it was, hey, if I got my socks knocked off of, I would have moved them, but I didn't?
Yeah, no, I didn't get that.
Oh, I definitely got that.
I got that they were, you know, they weren't really looking to do much. And do a lot of talking? Yeah, you always do a lot of talking. But what do you actually come up with? You know, that's something else.
Text her to the text line. Poyle's loyalty got him here, and his loyalty will get him out of here. I don't know if David Poyle's in any hot water. But then again, I always thought that they were going to keep Peter through the end of the year, so what the hell do I know? But at the same time, I do think David has been too loyal to this core. That group, the group begged us to keep it together, so we're going to keep it together. And they've made one massive move in the last 3 years, and that was the trade of PK Subban and the signing of Duchesne. And this is, in large part, the same team that you've won with before. And he even brought up keeping the band back together today. I do think that he so desperately wants to do that, and he thinks it can work out. And I'm not sure in sports if you can ever operate with a constantly keep this group together mentality. Unless there's no salary cap and you're the Dallas Cowboys of the 1990s. And it's like, yeah, keep Michael and Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and that offensive line. And that, like, yeah, keep that band together. Sure, the Steelers of the 70s. But in a salary capped game, I'm not sure you can keep the band together for 3 years and it work out to the level that
it depends on the age of your team. You know, where are they? Because at a point in time, if you've got a whole group of 32-year-olds, and I'm just throwing out a number, you got a whole group of 32-year-olds, they're probably not going to improve a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you see is what you get. Now, if you got a whole group of 24-year-olds, now you could be different. Now you're saying, well, you know what? This kid's just getting warmed up here. He may really turn into something special. So I think it depends on you know, where you are. And I worry about that from an age standpoint with some of these guys that are a little, you know, getting a little bit older. You worry about, well, you know, how much better is Johansson, for example? I'm just throwing a name out there. How much better can he get?
Well, you got him for the next 6 years, so you tell me.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's not going anywhere unless you trade him.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're probably looking at a group of guys like that versus can, you know, somebody else down the line get better? Granlund or whoever, you know, whatever, a younger guy get better.
All right, let's take your phones, 615-737-1025, your calls, and we got a bunch of texts to get to, which we'll do next. Jared and the GM live from the Whole Selling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Our long commercial-free segment is next. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
You know, being very open with everybody, I certainly entertained offers on and was open to talking about a lot of our players, including our free agents that you just mentioned, and Granlund and Smith. But the fact that I'm standing here and didn't do anything just tells you at the end of the day that I felt that our team was playing, you know, well enough. And again, if I go back to the start of the season, I was very bold in my statements about the belief in our team. And again, it's been a rocky road to this point, but I'm totally focused on the playoffs. And I mean, keeping Craig Smith and keeping Granlund with maybe the hope that we could continue discussions a little bit further and possibly have them sign with us during the season and the off season, with the clear direction that we're geared up to make the playoffs. That was the final decision.
So David says he was open to talking about a number of players, but ultimately decided, you know what, go for it. See what you can get out of it. And I think a lot of fans like that. I think there are a lot of fans that wanted to go for it. And I understand where you're coming from with that. And I'll be honest, there is a part of me. I still don't think trading Granlund and Smith would have been a white flag necessarily. But it would have put onus on the good players to play better, or else it would have been a white flag for sure. But I understand where the fans are coming from. So I understand that aspect of it.
I think he made it clear, too, what he was doing. You know, I mean, I understand all of that. Again, whether you agree with it or not, you know, you understand. And it sounds like he was listening and didn't get enough of an offer to get any of those guys pulled away. And his final analysis was it was more important for them to be here and to make a run at the playoffs than it would be for whatever they were getting in return.
Texter to the text line. The difference is the captain 3 years ago, Mike Fisher, instilled that desperation trait in the team, and we have not seen it since. Do you agree with the texter?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like since Fisher retired, there's been a lot of talk about him and his leadership role and how big it was and how important it was. You know, I'm not sure. I mean, that very well could be the reason. I'm just not sure.
Text or the text line. Question for Floyd. Poyle said the Grimaldi deal may have been affected by his shootout goal on Saturday. I have no problem with it, but is Poyle too close to the team?
I don't know if you're too close to the team.
I think David was kidding. I think he said that tongue-in-cheek when it was like, hey, that was a cherry on top. Was that goal yesterday?
I think that he has, and I thought this from the start, he kind of had his mind made up in the direction they were going. And he, you know, whether the two wins against St. Louis or the 3 points we got this weekend, none of that really affected him one way or the other. I think this probably turned out just about the way that he kind of anticipated it would.
Text for the GM. I know football and hockey are different, but how bad did things have to be for you to think that you should pull the plug on a roster and start over? It feels like the Predators are stuck in neutral, but I understand the hesitancy to start over since they are, and quote, in the mix team.
Yeah, I mean, David really believes that this team is a good team. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I think that may be the big disparagement or the big disagreement that I have with David. Is like David referenced in that clip that we played coming back from break, I had bold predictions coming into the season for what this team was going to be. I did too. I thought this team was going to be a cup contender this year. I don't feel that way right now. I don't hold myself to what I thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year. And I think he is kind of still focused on what he thought this team could be, but more so than what they have shown to be so far.
Well, yeah. And I think he hit it with, I thought this team, you know, I had bold predictions from the start. And in the last 12 games, we just went 8-4. So, you know, there's not really a great deal here to change my mind. And so, you know, right now the big push is going to be to the playoffs.
Now, we talked about how bad that Chicago team was Friday night and how, what was it? They had won like one of their last seven or one of their last eight, and Columbus had lost seven in a row before you played them or something crazy like that. And you only pulled out a point the other night because Pecorine stole that game. And you only pulled out two because you won in the eighth round of a shootout against what was essentially an AHL team in Columbus. When the Titans win games like that, even though we sometimes call it into question, we certainly did when Mike Mularkey was the coach, but when the Titans win games like that, you always tell us, hey, win's a win in the NFL, and it's hard to win in the NFL. So I don't care that you won by 1 yard against a crummy Charger team. You know, you won by 1 yard, and now you're on your way with that victory. Do we feel the same way about hockey? Because the 8-4-1 means a whole lot different to me if we're going to say, okay, we're going to live by that and just say you are what your record says you are, and they're playing well of late, so that means that they're good, as opposed to, man, the Blues outplayed you on that Sunday night. Pekka stole that game, didn't play well Tuesday night, didn't play well Friday night, but very lucky to get a point because of how well Pekka played, and didn't really play all that well Saturday outside of the first period. But you won the game, so you know what? Forget that Columbus didn't dress $30 million. Like, just win's a win, and that's how we're going to approach it. Is that the right way to approach this, or do we need to look at that record with a little bit of a grain of salt and say, well, yes, but?
Well, you know, again, we didn't think twice about being really excited about last weekend. I mean, the last 2 weekends, we played the best team in hockey and maybe a couple of the worst teams in hockey.
The Blues aren't the best team in hockey. They were the best team in the West at the time.
Last year. I mean, they got the Stanley Cup in their place. So, you know, we out of the potential 8 points in the last 2 weekends, we got 7. So, I mean, I don't know how you can gripe a great deal about that. You know, I mean, that's... Now, and playing two completely different teams. You know, playing the Stanley Cup champs and playing a team that has been virtually decimated by injuries.
Oh, and that Chicago team?
Oh.
That team,
yeah,
Friday night. And Chicago, like, I'm going to be honest.
Chicago's last place team.
That Friday night game was awful. I mean, Pekka was so good in that game. And I don't think he's going to get enough credit because it happened on a Friday and you're all the way on a Monday, so you're not.
Yeah.
Like, that Chicago team sucks. They are awful. And they really manhandled you for a lot of that game. So it makes it tougher for me to get on board with it. But then again, with the Titans, now when Mike Mularkey was coach, everybody was throwing fits about how they were winning. But now it's like, hey, you win by a yard against the Chargers, you win by a yard against the Chargers, move on.
We'll take it.
And so maybe we should approach hockey that way. I don't know. I don't know the answer to these questions. Texter, effort was something you guys called into question a lot earlier in the winter. Obviously, they need to play better, but at this point, do you feel at least better about the effort you've seen from the Predators? Yes. I think that is a simple one-word answer to that question. Yes. Even the Sunday night St. Louis game, even the who'd they play last week? Carolina. Even the Carolina game, they didn't play well, and it was a bad performance, but they played hard. Like, I was probably sitting, I don't know, 10, 15 rows up. I mean, I could see they were playing hard. They just played not very well. That is different from when we've looked at them and said, man, they look like they're dogging it out there. I would say this under Hines, they have not looked like they're dogging it out there.
Yeah, no, they're playing with a lot more intensity, a lot more effort. I think now, does that mean it's always good? Well, not necessarily, but I think to the tweets, you know, point. I mean, he's been striving about, you know, getting effort from the players, and I think he's getting that much.
Text, making trades at the deadline rarely brings immediate success, and the prices were probably too low. Stop right there. With the prices that were going out on the market this year, I mean, a first, second, third for JPG from Ottawa? A number one for Kasha from Anaheim? Kasha? I would not say the prices were too low. Now, I do wonder what the prices on your guys were, but who knows? Texter continues. He changed the coach, and he wants to give Hines an opportunity to make the team better. If the Predators don't make the playoffs, that's when he will make the quote-unquote core moves. I agree. I think if the Predators don't make the playoffs this year, Poile will have no choice but to make humongous changes.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand that. I mean, the way, if you don't make the playoffs this year, the trend for the club over the last few years has not been good. And that's why, you know, you need to make the playoffs and you need to see if you can't make a little, you know, take a stride or two in the playoffs.
I just think about how we reacted to last year after they got knocked out in 6 games of the first round and pretended like it was a tragedy. That what happened to this team last year, And now here we are a year later, and it's like if they lose in the first round in six games, I think everybody will walk away from this season and say, hey, they tried. But it won't be like it was last year. I mean, people were vehemently upset. They were upset with what happened. I mean, the press conference they had at 5 o'clock the day before the NFL draft was basically a we're taking the blame for this season kind of press conference.
Well, I don't think...
And now I think they're shooting for what they ended with last year is almost what it feels like the goal is this year.
And I think, you know, that's, you know, trend in my mind. You're going from, okay, Stanley Cup Finals, President's Trophy, you know, you're out in the second, out in the first, don't make it. I mean, that is not, that would not be pretty.
Scott is up next on Jared and the GM. What's up, Scott?
Oh, Jared, it must be a slow day if you'd be worrying about it. 2 points is 2 points. And I'll tell you, this 8-4-1 run, you have never talked about this or acknowledged it. The 8-4-1 run began with the most difficult road trip in hockey. A week and a half, Western Canada, they played four teams on the road, all of them above them in the standings. They won the first two. They got screwed by the refs in Edmonton. And they laid a bomb in Vancouver. But they looked pretty good on the road trip, all in all. I mean, they should have won three of them.
Okay, I'm not going to – if we're going to do the 2 points is 2 points, we're also not going to play the they should have won that game at the same time. You can't have it both ways.
Well, no. I'm using your rules.
No. You started the call off with if 2 points is 2 points, then you can't give me the should have. You can't do that. You're operating under 2 points is 2 points. So when they lost the Edmonton game, they lost the – they went 2-2 on the road trip, which was okay. We thought they needed to play a little bit better. Then they played great the following weekend when they beat New York and they beat the Blues. And then they played, I don't know, how would you label last week? Okay? Like, I mean, were you impressed by what they did last week?
During this run, they've beaten six teams ahead of them in the standings, and that's what they need to do. They've gotten 17 points in the last 13 games. They keep that up, they'll be fine. They'll be, you know, the number one wild card slot. It's not inconceivable. You know, 6 weeks from now, they may be the hottest team in hockey. We don't know.
So I don't disagree with what you're saying there by any means. It's going to sound like I think this caller like wanted to, you know, like have a fight with me about this or whatever. They may be the hottest team in hockey in 6 weeks and go win the cup. This is a weird sport. I'm not saying it's inconceivable or impossible. But we've been saying that for a long time now, and they've played the exact same. We were talking about this. Even though they're 8-4-1. I asked you during the break, I said, does it really feel that way? Because doesn't it always feel like 3 points out of a playoff spot, 1 point out of a playoff spot, 5 points out of a playoff spot, 3 points out of a playoff spot, 1 point out of a playoff spot, 3 points out of a playoff spot, 1 point out of a playoff spot, 3 points out of a playoff spot, 1 point out of a playoff spot? It feels like it's been the same for the last 3 months.
Yeah, well, it seems like it has been a while where we've always been knocking on that door, you know, right at the edge. Saying, geez, if we get a couple wins here, we'll be right where we need to be.
And I feel like there have been three or four times where it's like, God, okay, if they win this game, they're back in the playoff picture for the first time since November 19th. Like, this is it. And then they lose. And it happened at that Edmonton game he talked about. It happened at home with the stinker they threw out against Vegas. It happened last week. Like, it's happened with this team. So I'm not disagreeing with what he's saying. I just, it's... It's hard for me to get all
I'll say this now. The numbers that he threw out there and the numbers that David threw out there, I mean, those numbers aren't bad now.
Yeah, but you can always take numbers and put them however you want to make
them. Yeah, but I mean, the 2 points does matter, you know. And I think you look at the points. What did he say? 17 points in the last 12 or 14 games or whatever? I mean, that's not bad. All of that is trending in the right direction.
Adam Vingan up next. His thoughts on the deadline. Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Trade deadline has passed, and I would liken the activity at this deadline. If people want to use comparatives to the Cup Run team, even though I'm not sure this team really does compare to that Cup Run team, but people like to, you know, use that. They acquired P.A. Parenteau that year for really nothing, and they acquired a defenseman today who I've never heard of for really nothing. But a guy from Anaheim probably looks like a bottom pair guy. Adam Vinken from The Athletic joins us. Adam, I want to start with this question. I know that you expected, because your column basically said that over the weekend, you did not expect the Predators to make a big move today, either buying or selling. Do you agree with that decision that the Predators made?
Oh, that's a good question. Personally, I think if the Predators would have gotten a significant offer for one of their pending unrestricted free agents, specifically Mikael Granlund or Craig Smith, that the Predators should have entertained that, should have entertained those offers. But I just kind of kept going back to what David Poile said within the past hour, that to make those trades would, in my opinion at least, be the equivalent of waving a white flag on the season. And I just could not imagine David Poile doing anything that would reduce this team's chances of making the playoffs. So while I don't completely agree with it, I do understand his point of view. And as you mentioned, it was no surprise to me that no one of significance was moved out or brought in today.
Do you agree with a lot of fans, I think, have this belief of as long as you make the playoffs, anything can happen. And I think we heard a lot of that from Poile today without him saying it, but with his goal being to make the playoffs. Do you think as currently constructed right now, this Predators team could actually make the playoffs and do something if they get in there?
Well, I'll answer it in two parts. I absolutely think that this Predators team can make the playoffs. I don't have any doubt that this group can make the playoffs. To answer your second question, there's a big if, and that big if is, as we've talked about in recent weeks, the play of their star forwards, Ryan Johansson, Matthew Shane, Philip Forsberg, and Victor Arvidsson. If those players play like they have been through most of the season, they won't go very far. But if they can find another gear on paper at the beginning of the season, I think many people would have said that this was the most talented Predators roster in franchise history on paper. So if those players can find it within themselves to start playing as they are expected to and as their salaries would indicate, then I do think that this team could make a little run in the playoffs. I really believe that the Western Conference is wide open. You look at the teams in the Eastern Conference, and there's a clear hierarchy. There's Washington, there's Pittsburgh, there's Boston, there's Tampa. You know, in the Western Conference, it isn't as clear. You know, St. Louis is up there. The Pacific Division is a crapshoot between Vegas and Edmonton and Vancouver and Calgary and Arizona. I really do think that if the Predators can make it into the playoffs and have their best players play like their best players, that they could do something. But those are some gigantic ifs that I'm talking about.
Adam, in the press conference afterwards, I think, you know, David went through and in my mind kind of tried to hit everything. He kind of gave you the reasons for his thoughts about whether or not to sell, to buy, whatever the case may be. Did that press conference satisfy you?
Huh. Well, it's not necessarily that it satisfied me. It's more that what he said was what I expected him to say. You know, he said that just based on the way that this team has been playing this year, he didn't see himself being a buyer at the deadline as he has in previous years. And it was either hold the fort or sell. And I think that the way that I, and this is what I asked, if the recent play of this team, which I think he said was 8-4-1 in the last 12 or 13 games, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, that, you know, I asked him if that influenced his decision at all, and it sounded like it did. It sounded also like he understands that some rope needs to be given with the fact that this team has a new coach, that sort of changes everything when you want your players to assimilate to a new coach. So it wasn't necessarily whether I was unsatisfied or satisfied. I just think what we heard today was what I expected him to say at the beginning of the day.
Did you, what do you know about the guy that they traded for? Anything?
Well, it could be argued that the defenseman that they traded for today, Corbini and Holzer, is actually worse than Matt Irwin. And they traded Irwin and a sixth-round pick for Corbini and Holzer. He's played, I think, roughly 200. Now I have it in front of me. He's played 203 NHL games between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Anaheim Ducks. His career high for games played is this season with the Ducks. He's played in 46 games. He has a career 6 goals in 203 games. He's not an offensive defenseman. He's a defensive-minded defenseman. David Poile said that he wanted to get a little bit more physical in the bottom end of the depth, maybe someone who could play on the penalty kill. But if you look at the fancy stats, it could be argued that there are a few defensemen in this league that are worse than Matt Irwin, and Corbini and Holzer might be one of them.
Wow. That is... Wow. Adam Finkin joining us from the... I mean, I don't know anything about this guy, so maybe I'll watch him play a couple of games before I make that kind of assumption, but Matt Irwin is terrible. So if this guy is worse than Matt Irwin, then that is a giant red flag. Adam Finkin joining us from The Athletic. Adam, why aren't the Predators' top forwards playing well? And David Poile said today could not give a clear answer as to why that's the case. At what point do they need to have a clear answer about that? And can they do anything of substance without those four guys playing much, much better?
Well, it goes back to what we were previously talking about whether this team can make a run in the playoffs if they make the playoffs. And if those players are playing like they have been, the answer is no. And to be honest with you, I don't have a clear answer either. The only one that I think the clearest answer is with Victor Arvidsson. I just don't think Victor Arvidsson is completely healthy.
Agreed.
And that's why he's playing the way he's been playing. As for the other three, I can't quite put my finger on it. I'm not surprised, to be honest with you, about the play of Matthew Shane. I mean, I expected a little bit more from him, but he has never been the type of player who makes the players around him better. He's a very good hockey player, but he's not a player who, what's the saying, a tide that lifts all boats or whatever. He is not that kind of player. Ryan Johansson, to me, is the most concerning because he's presumably been healthy all year. I think he's played in every game. And I know that his line mates have been switched around quite a bit. He hasn't played with Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson anywhere near as much. And when they have played together, they haven't been good. To me, that is the one that concerns me the most. Just because, you know, Rocco Grimaldi today signed a 2-year, $4 million contract. Rocco Grimaldi has 4 fewer points this season than Ryan Johansson. That is a red alert for me. It's great for Rocco. It's not great for everybody else.
Johansson makes double the amount of that whole contract in 1 year.
Yes. So it's hard. I mean, Jared and Floyd, just like David said, if I knew exactly what was wrong, I would attempt to tell you, but I just quite can't figure it out myself.
Last question for you. Adam Finkin from The Athletic is our guest here on the show. Is there going to be a point in time where John Hines has to give those guys the ice time to play out of their funk?
Well, you look at some of the games, and they are playing 17, 18, 18 and a half minutes. I know we spend a lot of time focusing on when they were playing 11 minutes against Vancouver a couple of weeks ago or whatever it was, but I understand both sides of it, and that's what I asked John Hines a couple of weeks ago. I asked him, what is the tightrope a coach has to walk between making sure you're holding your top players accountable but also not hindering them or your team by, for lack of a better term, benching your most offensively skilled players? And he understands that that is a fine line. But as he said, you can give those players all the ice time you want, but if they're not playing the way they need to, they're not going to produce offense. So I don't blame John Hines for what he has done, but it is up to him, as he said the other day, and the coaching staff to do what they can on and off the ice to make sure that these players are playing consistently. And if he feels that he needs to get a message across by holding them accountable, so be it. But those players have shown that his decision has been justified because they for the most part, they haven't responded as he would have hoped.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic, as always. Adam, appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, Adam Vingan joining us on the program. And I will say this, I at least give David Poyle credit for, you know, if John Hines is going to, you know, go by the mantra of you earn your playing time, he's been consistent about it, and David kept the guys that have been playing well that support what Hines has done. So I do give David credit, and I give Hines credit in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, that was a key element in all this, I'm sure.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, quickly, our thoughts. Do a little Preds breather. Our thoughts on the fight on Saturday night. Was it a good fight, bad fight? Plus, Deontay Wilder's already said he wants back in. We'll discuss next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyson Fury did a great feint before throwing that combination, and this is what he's going to be doing throughout this fight, feinting and then throwing that big right.
Wilder just coasting back into that neutral corner, and now Fury's looking to split the guard as Wilder's in bad shape. This fight is over. TKO victory. There is only one. There is only one. Crown the king, the lone undefeated heavyweight champion of the world, Tyson Fury, the champion.
Good fight on Saturday. I actually enjoyed it. And we talked about this more off the air than on the air. But you're a boxing guy, Floyd.
I enjoy boxing, yeah. Now, but, I didn't see this fight, but I enjoy the box.
Like, my lifetime of fighting in my life, like, I think I was, like, 7 when Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's ear. So, I have not. All the guys that you probably liked, the Muhammad Ali's, the Joe Frazier's, the, you know, the Joe Lewis's.
Well, there was a time where heavyweight boxing was not just a boxing event, but a world event. I mean, it was gigantic. And then it disappeared, and then it sounds like, you know, with this pair, it might be coming back a little bit.
So that's the hope for boxing, I think, is that now it looks like it's Tyson Fury, but that one of these two guys was going to save heavyweight boxing. Because in my lifetime, Floyd Mayweather has been the biggest boxer, and honestly, his fights stink. They're so boring, and he just dances around the whole time, and that's not heavyweight fighting. I mean, there were punches thrown on Saturday night. What I had a couple of thoughts on the fight. First off, Deontay Wilder has already come out, according to The Athletic. Deontay Wilder has said he plans on exercising his rematch clause because I guess there was a clause built into the contract that the loser would be able to call for a rematch, and Wilder's going to do that. And I guess the 45-pound costume that he wore to honor Black History Month, that he wore to walk into the ring on, he says tired his legs out. Which, by the way, the introductions for both of them were two of the stupidest introductions I've ever seen in my entire life. I was embarrassed for sports. You got, what was it, Patsy Cline, that Fury walked out on a bed with four people carrying him into the ring for Patsy Cline or to Patsy Cline. I thought that was terrible. And then Wilder's, I just thought was stupid. I guess there's going to be a rematch with this. It wasn't a close fight. I mean, it wasn't a close fight. I felt like in the first round, Tyson Fury dominated. And by the end of the third round, you knew the fight was over. By the end of the third, you knew Wilder didn't have a chance. And in about the fourth and the fifth rounds, Wilder would get up from some of these shots, and he'd get up, and I was worried for him. Like, I'd see him get up, and he was not on solid ground. And I'm like, oh, man, one punch from Fury's going to end it right here. I thought that one punch may do more than just end it in the fight. I mean, Wilder was hurting. And then in the seventh round, when they finally threw in the towel, I thought to myself, why didn't you throw in the towel two rounds earlier? What are you waiting for the seventh round? The way he looked at the seventh round wasn't as bad as he looked at the fifth round. I thought it was an entertaining fight. I just don't think that Wilder would ever have a chance against Fury. He's too big. He's too strong. He punches too hard. But I do think that boxing's got a shot if these two guys, especially Fury, if they can continue to kind of do this and get real challengers, I think boxing may actually have a chance.
Well, they need to go back and forth, and I'm sure they know this. I mean, they need to split these wins enough so there's always a challenge, because I don't know who's out there after this.
They could fight Tyson Fury?
Yeah. You know, so it used to be there was a whole, you know, ladder of people mm-hmm. that were waiting for their turn, and they were getting ready, and, you know, they had records of 45-0 and, you know, whatever, and it was their turn. When's my turn? I don't think those guys are around. Now, there'll be somebody out there that's, you know, 9-1-1. Great. You know, I mean, that's the hard. But the great part, the true fun about it, watching these heavyweights, is, I mean, if you or I got hit by one of those punches, we wouldn't wake up till next Tuesday.
Oh, no, not you for Fury.
You'd be done. They're so big and they're so strong and they know how to punch. And that's why the guys that actually do get hit, I mean, you talk about taking a punch, that's like getting hit in the head with a sledgehammer or something.
I mean, there was blood coming out of Wilder's ear for most of the night.
Yeah.
And at one point, Fury licked it. It was so gross. And they showed like a close-up, like instant replay of Fury licking the blood off of like the shoulder of Wilder. I'm like, that is so gross. I'll say this. I didn't know a whole lot about these two guys going into the fight. I've actually met Deontay Wilder before, but I didn't really know much about these two guys going into the fight. I thought Wilder was going to win because everybody was making it out to be like Wilder was great. And, you know, Fury's okay, but he's not Wilder. They could have fought 100 times and Wilder would have never won.
Yeah, they like I said, they need to. They'll fight again, I'm sure. And this time, you know, Wilder needs to win so they can fight again. And you know,
a
that
fourth
would
fight
be,
between two guys.
Yeah, that would be the best thing for the sport. You know, if they just went back and forth. For
if they
a while.
Go again, will you pay for it?
No, I mean the next one will be more expensive than this one.
I think this is what, $80
the next. I don't know. I didn't, but it was up there. And I'm not paying, you know, the problem is you pay $80 for a 30-second match, especially with these big guys, you know. So, no, I'm not going to do that.
I mean,
I love watching. You know what? I'll be able to go home tonight and get it for nothing.
Oh, well, yeah, so. But you know, that's not the point of these fights. I only watched the fight because a buddy of mine had a bunch of us over, and he had the fight. So that's why I went over, you know, it was a party, go watch the fight. I probably would not have paid for that fight.
Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't have.
What does that mean?
You're not a boxing fan. So
no,
I'm
but
sure.
But I enjoy watching the.
You would pay $80 to see a fight on TV.
I paid for one fight. De La Hoya versus Mayweather. I was in high school. I invited all my friends over and we watched De La Hoya Mayweather. And after that, I went to a party for Mayweather Pacquiao. So I didn't pay to watch that fight. I watched Mayweather McGregor. The Lexus Lounge had a big party for Mayweather McGregor, and I just rode on Chris Mason's coattails in that one. I guess I don't know. I'm kidding about that. No, we were there as part of, you know, trying to get people to. And I mean, they sold that thing out. The Preds did for Mayweather McGregor, but that wasn't even really a fight. I mean, that was like just a money grab. Although it was enjoyable. So I didn't pay for that, and then I went to my buddy's house for this, so I didn't pay for that. You're right. I'm not. They'll fight this summer. I'll watch it, and I won't pay for it. Yeah. There's probably a lot of truth in that. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. We now know what the Predators will look like down the stretch as they head into the playoff run or whatever have you. We'll get to that in the next hour. But coming up next, we've got our first controversy of the NFL Combine. How big of a deal is it, Floyd, that Joe Burrow's got a 9-inch hand? Jared of the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming of the Game National app.